This Sunday, I'm starting a series of sermons that is going to be based on this this entire book of Ruth. And I think it's a good idea to go through the narratives of the Bible and pick up important parts of our tradition. And before I start, I want to say a few things about this remarkable story. There are a few themes that you can point to in this story. One would be the ancestry, the importance of the ancestry of David. Another is the affirmation of what they call the Deuteronomic Code. Another is the affirmation that the concern of God extends beyond the people of Israel to all people. But first and foremost, and this is what I want to focus on today, that the book of Ruth shows human beings doing what God wants relationships to look like. There's a key word that keeps coming up again and again in this book. Ruth is about those who practice, in the Hebrew, chesed. Now, this is such an important word. For to understand the story, I want us all to practice this word and say it out loud. Just, and you got to kind of like let it like this. So say it with me. Chesed. Chesed. All right, good. And the reason why you need to know this word is that it has no really good translation into the English. Chesed is often translated, if you read the Bibles, as kindness. But this often does not really capture the meaning. Chesed is much more than politeness or sweetness. It's a kindness above and beyond the call of duty. The word also has been translated in different translations in different Bibles as loving kindness or goodness, righteousness, or faithfulness, depending upon which Bible you read. But probably, I think the best English word in translation is the word loyalty. And so this is what the story of Ruth is all about. Ruth is a story of chesed. It's about loyalty. It's a story of integrity, human responsibility, and kindness. This is a story of a testimony that there is a way in which we are meant to live our lives. This way goes beyond mere legal obligation or social convention. Chesed is actually the driving principle that is behind the law. It's a story not just about human loyalty, which we might expect. It's a story about loyalty which imitates the divine initiative which comes to us unconditionally. So the story of chesed says that living a righteous and responsible life is a matter of determination. So we're not talking about actions that are not just kind, but actions that show that one is dedicated and committed to the other. And there's one more thing. In a day and age when people might ask, where is God, when God is less visible in the signs and wonders, this story shows how we can see God in the loyalty of these people. God is present and working for good in the everyday faithful actions of ordinary people. And so here the story begins. It says, in the days when the judges rule. Now you might be able to paraphrase this and to say, in the days when legal matters were handled properly, when there was justice. In these days, it says there was a famine. Elimelech was from Bethlehem, and the word Bethlehem literally means in the Hebrew, house of bread. And so we have this interesting situation. One would think that the house of bread, under just rule, should be the last place for a shortage of food. How could there be such widespread suffering in a land of plenty? And I suppose one could ask the same question here about here in the United States of America. If there's any country today which should be called the house of bread, maybe this is it. If there's any country which has just rule, perhaps this is it. We often hear people say that this is the greatest country in the world. And yet, this should be the very last place to find people forgotten and falling between the cracks. This should be the last place to find an epidemic shortage of affordable and decent places to live. This should be the last place to find hundreds of thousands of people who are desperate to find jobs that pay enough so they can live. It should be the last place to find women and children suffering from hunger and malnutrition. And yet, in the United States, it's estimated that there are 43 million people who live in poverty and who experience inadequate food and shelter in this, the house of bread. 43 million. There are also 2.5 million children who are homeless in this land of plenty. So the parents, Elimelech and Naomi, and the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, leave Judah to settle in Moab because of this famine. Okay, so this famine is which drives them, which in fact drives many people who immigrate. They become resident aliens, refugees. And the phrase to live as a stranger indicates that they were living on the margins without any rights or privileges of those who belonged. And they were already vulnerable, unprotected by the law, and subject to the prejudices and hostilities of others. And then what happens? And then Elimelech dies, and Naomi is left with two sons. And eventually, these two sons marry Moabite wives. They marry Orpah and Ruth. And they are married for about 10 years without any children. Now, this is significant because children were essential for future survival. This is one reason why when you read the Bible, they are counted as blessings. They were security. Children were like a pension fund, Social Security, and Medicare all rolled into one, you see. You needed to have them. So then Mahlon and Chilion die. And all hope seems cut off without any ability now to have children. And so Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah were all now childless widows. And this was disastrous. Not only were they immigrants in a strange land with no protection, now they were widows. And this meant to be stripped of any identity or security in this male-dominated society where they only had derivative status. On her own, a woman had no status at all, nothing. With no male presence, they now had absolutely no life support. And so Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, return to your mother's house. There they have some measure of legal protection and security and greater chances of remarriage. And she continues, may the Lord grant that you may find security in the house of your future husband. Naomi was older. beyond the age of remarrying, and she had given up on herself, and she was willing, she was telling these two, look, you know, I'm a lost cause. Really, I am. Save yourselves. Don't let me drag you down. She says, call me no longer Naomi, which means pleasant, Hebrew for pleasant. Call me now Mara, which means bitter. For the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. Somebody once paraphrased this by saying, do not call me sweetie, call me instead sourpuss. And yet, Naomi sees in these two women a kindness and devotion which is of God. She says, may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt kindly with me. They are models of God in our story. In our holy Hebrew text, these heroes, these models of God, who are they? They're outsiders, right? They are not Hebrew. They are Moabites. Many of whom were looked down upon. Now, Orpah was the sane and reasonable one. She sadly kisses her mother-in-law goodbye. But, as our story goes, Ruth clung to her. Naomi said, why don't you get some sense like Orpah? But Ruth still clung to her, it says. Now, it's important that this is the same word used in the creation story in Genesis when it says a man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife, and they become one flesh. Only here now, these are two women clinging to each other. This is the kind of commitment and loyalty in human relationships that God intended for the creation. And this is the kind of commitment and loyalty that Ruth demonstrates. And then we have some of the most beautiful words in the entire scriptures, the embodiment of Hesed. And they come from Ruth, and she says, entreat me not to abandon you, to turn from following you. For where you go, I go. Where you sleep, I sleep. Your people are my people. Your God is my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. Even at the possibility, no, the probability of her own death, Ruth sticks by Naomi and declares her solidarity with her instead of doing the logical thing. Ruth's choice makes no sense. She leaves behind the security of her mother's house and their family. She disavows her national identity and religious affiliation. This young woman commits herself to the life of an old woman rather than search for a husband. She chooses death over life. She declares her loyalty to Naomi and says, even if death parts me from you. And in this relationship, I think, we can catch a glimpse of how God has intended humanity to live in the kind of loyalty one is to have for the other, especially for the weak and the afflicted. In our story, Ruth hears a different voice than the voice of reason. She hears the voice of compassion and love. She hears the need of her neighbor speaking louder than any other voice. For God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the strong, wrote Paul. Ruth said, your God will be my God. She chooses Naomi's God, the God of Israel. And then she shows then what it means to follow this God. Ruth, the non-believer, shows Naomi and us God's loyalty. The story of Ruth shows a very important quality about God, that the God of Israel, later revealed in Jesus, is loyal to the end. Divine love does not let go. It's absolutely stubborn. As a community that proclaims the reality of God in the world, our most important witness might be to demonstrate Hesed. In the midst of a difficult situation that we might find ourselves in the midst of our barrenness, we can demonstrate God's Hesed in our loyalty and in our convictions. As we cling and bind ourselves with those who are marginalized in our society, we proclaim God's Hesed. As we stubbornly stick together, we show the world how God stubbornly sticks with all human beings. There's something about God the world needs to know. There's a fierce devotion, an unshakable dedication, a ridiculous and insane loyalty, and an absolutely pig-headed love. This kind of loyalty is not valued very much by our world. It's hard to find. In the name of progress, we make alliances with the powerful, not the weak. In hopes of victory, we bind ourselves with the insiders, not the alienated. In order to be effective and to be smart, we seek those who can help us in the halls of establishment, not those who are vulnerable and exposed. Divine loyalty is rare because it's not outcome-based. In fact, it appears to be quite the opposite. As Johanna Boss wrote, it joins weakness to weakness, loss of hope to loss of hope. It's not the sensible thing to do. And so Professor Boss writes, the God of ancient Israel is the God of loyalty, devotion, kindness, in the Hebrew Hesed. In God's alliance with ancient Israel, there's no advantage for God. At the time of the Exodus, God clung to the weakest and most oppressed group around. God's people are called to show the same behavior toward one another that God showed them. The life of Hesed is a characteristic of the people who claim to be God's people. Yet when the going gets tough, people often throw up their hands and walk away. We give up on each other too easily. Our partners, our mothers and fathers, our sons and daughters, our friends, and the vulnerable and the weak in our communities and in our nation. Friends, let God's love for us in steadfastness and in love, God's Hesed and loyalty to us is unshakable. May this inspire us to be loyal to God and God's ways of compassion and justice. May we stubbornly cling to each other. And finally, may we be open not just to causes out there, but causes of compassion and justice. And may we bravely bind ourselves with the afflicted and with all of God's children. Amen.